What if I did our intro like a game caster?
Oh, I would love it. Please.
I don't know if I could make it through our entire intro.
I bet you can't even get the welcome done.
All right, well, let's take that bet.
I'll say.
What are we waging?
Waging?
Yeah.
Well, you only wage war, I think. Can you wage other things?
Money? Anything that you want to gamble. What do you want to gamble? What are the stakes?
You mean wager?
I guess. Whoever wins, picks dinner.
Whoever wins, passenger princesses to pick up dinner.
Okay, I like that.
Okay.
Okay.
We have an accord.
I will agree to those terms. Okay. Welcome to the Half-Baked History Podcast, where we get half-baked and tell you about history.
Sup, nerds?
I cannot believe that I made it through that.
I guess I'm driving.
I guess I'm going to be the passenger princess. I am very excited.
How lucky are you?
We've been driving a lot this week, so I feel like
I have been getting calluses.
I would also like to point out that I did pageless for my notes.
Oh, yeah?
So I should have no scrolling issues.
Wow. Okay.
And my thoughts will never be broken by a page break, which happens quite often. I don't know how I didn't think of this sooner.
We don't need anything to break your thoughts.
Well, yeah, that's true. I do it myself.
Yeah.
Just looking at my beautiful bookcase.
Stop. It's too early.
Okay. Welcome. Welcome back.
Welcome to your favorite Weed Fuel podcast.
It's spring.
Kind of.
It's supposed to be spring.
It's raining a lot. I hate that.
It's rainy. Me. It's cold today. It's not great.
Yeah.
So on that note, let's talk about history.
Let's do it.
Today we are talking about Leonardo da Vinci.
Who's he? No, I'm
He's
kidding.
A Ninja Turtle.
I was going to say, probably one of the top three most famous
Leonardos. I'd say so. I'd say...
You're talking about the Ninja Turtle, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I would say it's DiCaprio, Da Vinci, Ninja Turtle.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. I agree with that.
I'm glad that you agree.
Yeah.
What do you know? What?
What do I know about Leonardo?
Ooh. Yeah, what do you know about Leonardo?
He invents things.
He does invent things.
Yes. Yeah. I know he looks into flight because of Assassin's Creed.
It is pretty historically accurate in some senses.
Video games can teach you things, people.
They can.
They're really rebuilding the Notre Dame from Assassin's Creed's scans. Look it up. That sounds fake. Look it up.
You're welcome.
It's real.
That's pretty fucking awesome, though.
Yeah.
Honestly. To have it that, not only detailed, but exact.
Yeah.
It's pretty dope.
Pretty crazy. And we didn't get to see it because it caught on fire when we went there.
Literally, a week beforehand. It was terrible timing.
And just like Americans, we're going to make that all about us and how we didn't get to see it.
How we were the ones.
Forget the people that were pained by it.
We don't care about them.
No. But he invents things.
He does invent things. He's into flying.
Yeah. That's all I know him for.
That's all?
That's it.
Not for one of his famous or maybe two famous paintings?
No.
Okay.
He's an inventor first, in my mind.
That just shows how your brain works, especially because on the podcast, you do all inventors.
Well, somebody's got to.
And I do all artists.
Yeah.
Because somebody's got to.
We have to balance it out. We have to balance the scales.
So now I am bringing those two worlds together.
Into one man.
Inventor and artist.
Leonardo.
Da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci was born on April 15th, 1452. So just a couple days from now will be his birthday.
Yeah, I'm just stuck on how long ago that was.
Yeah, 1452, people.
I mean, happy early birthday.
Happy early birthday. Ooh, let's see how old he would be today. Because I can't do that math in my head. He would be 572.
Wow, that is impressive. He's still being talked about today.
Half a thousand years later.
Yeah, no one's going to talk about me half a thousand years later.
Nobody's going to talk about, like, any of the popular actors and actresses and, like, celebrities.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Well.
Except Timothée Chalamet.
He's the one and only.
Pesky Paul.
Pesky Paul.
He's the best in Dune.
He honestly captures that character so perfectly.
I need to read it.
You really should. I really think you'd enjoy it.
I will read it. As Lisan Al-Gayoub is my witness, I will read it.
I will read Dune. Okay, okay, okay. He was born in Vinci, Italy.
Well.
I didn't realize it was in the name.
Yeah.
Until I saw it was in the name.
So he owns the town, right? I mean.
No, I think he's like, he's literally named after the town because he's Leonardo of Vinci. Vinci. Yeah.
Okay. Well, cool. When last names meant something.
Yeah. He was born out of wedlock, which was very shocking for the time, as we know.
What do you mean for the time?
Yeah, I mean shocking anytime. His parents ended up marrying separate people a year after his birth, which led Leonardo to then having 16 half-siblings.
Wow, so he...
Not all of them made it into adulthood.
Man, he drove his parents so far apart that they both had whole-ass separate families.
Yeah. Sometimes...
That's pretty powerful for a baby.
You just gotta taste the forbidden fruit.
Those men of Vinci...
He spent his first 5 years living with his mother, and then he moved into the family household of his father, uncle, and grandparents. So he moves back to Vinci.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's where he's from. His roots go deep.
His name is of Vinci. Yeah. He needs to live in Vinci for at least part of his life.
Yeah. Moving back.
Not much is known about his childhood. It was likely a pretty comfortable childhood. His father was a notary, which during the Renaissance seemed like it was a pretty respectable position. Like, not super well paid, but like...
So it's the same as today.
Yeah. Half a thousand years later, it is the same.
Not paid very well.
Well, no, like paid respectably.
Oh, okay.
They're like mid-upper class.
In the 1400s.
Or no, upper middle class in the mid-1400s.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, he really only received a pretty basic education from what we can glean. He was taught reading, writing, and math, but his family recognized pretty early on that like his talent is in the arts.
Yeah.
So they like really pushed that pretty early on.
Okay, cool. They water that seed. Keep... Painting.
According to his first biographer, he said that Leonardo was apparently very advanced in his study of arithmetic and was like gobsmacking his master with like questions and problems that he just came up with. Like he was just that smart.
Really?
He was just gobsmacked.
Man, that sounds like, who'd I do? Einstein?
Yes.
That sounds like Einstein.
I mean, I think he could give Einstein a run for his money.
What?
Yeah. I think at the end, make a note.
Okay.
No, like for real, make a note. At the end, we will come back and see if Leonardo is at the same level of geniusy as Albert Einstein. I don't think geniusy is a word.
I don't think so.
But I like the way it sounds.
He couldn't even achieve flight. Well, yeah.
You don't even know.
I'll stop.
You don't even know. By the age of 14, Da Vinci was a studio boy for Andrea del Verrocchio, who was a leading painter and sculptor in Florence.
Oh, all right. What do you do?
What do you do as like a studio boy?
Yeah, what's a studio boy?
So he had like one of the biggest artist workshops in Florence.
Okay.
So like as a studio boy, you would like, if he's painting, then like maybe you'd be the one to like set up the drop cloths, to collect the dirty rags, to like bring fresh water.
So you're like an assistant.
Yeah. But you're not the same as an assistant, because we'll get into that later.
Okay.
Okay. So he is a studio boy. Verrocchio's master or teacher was the sculptor Donatello, which aside from his work as a Ninja Turtle, I don't think you would recognize any of his work.
Definitely not. I'm very familiar with his wooden staff, his smarts with electronics.
His love for pizza.
His love for pizza, which I share.
Should we get the Little Caesar cheesy bites tonight?
That's not an ad.
That's just us thinking.
But perhaps.
Okay. Well, like, I really didn't recognize any of his work either. I recognize, like, a little bit. But he's a very famous artist. I mean, a turtle would not be named after him otherwise.
That's fair. So, you know, he must have been at least... maybe not a big deal, but like a deal.
A deal. He was a deal. So it just like to show the lineage, it's like he was working under some pretty excellent masters to learn from. Leonardo's dad was apparently friends with Verrocchio and showed him some of Leo's work. And he was like, yeah, bring that boy in.
I need a new boy.
Ew. When Leonardo was 17, he became an apprentice under Verrocchio and continued his training for another 7 years.
Seven more years.
But he's elevated now to apprentice.
All right, that's something.
Another notable artist who was a fellow apprentice at Verrocchio's studio was Botticelli. And his most recognizable painting is The Birth of Venus, the woman coming out of the pearl.
Oh, okay. That one.
That you're familiar
that
with.
That one I've seen.
Yes.
The Pearl Lady.
The Pearl Lady. So.
What's his name again?
Botticelli.
Botticelli.
That's a like a satisfying name to say.
Yeah. And like one you remember.
It sticks with you.
Botticelli.
It like sticks on you.
Yeah. Stick on you like Botticelli.
So, I mean, that just goes to show as well. Here's my supporting fact, that this is a very strong lineage of masters to be working
with. Well, yeah, he's got, like you said, he's an apprentice, too. So, like, he's got, like, peers that, like...
are good as shit.
Mm-hmm. Pushing him further.
Leonardo was also in the best location to be a Renaissance apprentice and, like, later artist, because... not only is he like surrounded by some of the greatest artists of the time, but artists are also starting to do like scientific studies on light and perspective. Mm. So like it's all happening around him and he's just like soaking it in.
Interesting.
He's like a sponge.
Yeah. He's just soaking up all that knowledge, all that innovation.
Just. Leonardo learned a lot. As an apprentice, he did work in chemistry, metalworking, painting, sculpting, and woodwork.
Man, what do you do in chemistry?
Well, I guess like you probably have to mix pigments for paints at a minimum.
Mm.
But I mean, I don't know.
Man,
they're just studying.
I mean, he has 7 years to do all this. So
yeah,
that's a lot of time. Yeah.
He also learned about geometry, which would become a near obsession for him throughout, like, his work.
Okay.
And he was especially into, like, how nature and math came together.
Yeah.
In the studio of Verrocchio, many of the paintings were done by his assistants. So, an alleged story about Leonardo is that he painted a subject in one of Verrocchio's... like one of his most popular works. And he painted the subject so well that Verrocchio put down his brush and he refused to paint ever again. Man. He was like, this kid is so fucking good. I cannot touch another paintbrush.
I can't paint anymore. There's not enough room in the world for my art with this kid.
There can only be room for one, and I am not that one.
Man, imagine a kid just destroying your whole, like, worldview.
Yeah.
Not me, bro. Get out of here, kid.
So this story is likely not true.
I would say that seems pretty extreme.
That's pretty far-fetched. But it is likely true that Leonardo painted that subject mm-hmm. in the painting. And you can see the difference in the painting styles if you look closely to it. So Leonardo was at the age of 20 when they started this painting. So he's like very young in his artistic career.
Right.
And he's already putting other men out of business. Well, not out of business. He's putting the paintbrush down.
He's making them second guess themselves is what he's doing.
Yes.
Man, so like do people know that the art coming out of there is also from the apprentices?
I think they do because okay. It's kind of like you're paying for like the next great thing.
I see.
You okay. know what I mean?
I just didn't know if there was like some shady stuff and it was like, yeah, no, this was all my work.
I mean, I don't think that they like,
yeah,
they don't give the apprentices any credit.
Right. No.
But like, I think it's pretty well known that they're like the foreman.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for anyone that wants to check out that painting and see if you can tell the difference between Leonardo's and Verrocchio's,
yeah.
The painting is The Baptism of Christ by Verrocchio. And Leonardo allegedly painted the angel all the way to the left holding Jesus's robes.
Oh.
So I'm going to show it to you to see if you can see the difference. Also, I want you to pay special attention to Jesus.
I always pay special attention to Jesus. How can you miss it?
How can you not?
Okay, she does look different mm-hmm. than like the rest of the painting.
Yeah.
So he didn't paint the whole painting. He just like most he likely just painted did
that,
her.
Yeah, that okay. angel.
Got it.
And like, I mean, you can even just see in like the movement of the fabric and like the way that he does her hair. Like everything about that angel is so much better than Verrocchio's angel.
Listen, it's different, but Jesus steals the show this shot.
Did you look at Jesus?
Yes.
Okay.
Once again, like I said, you can't not look at Jesus.
So I want you to tell me, what does Jesus look like to you in this painting?
He doesn't look great.
Because I specifically wrote something down in my notes of what I thought Jesus looked like. So I'm curious what you think Jesus looks like. I know it's not great, but like if you had to compare him to something.
What did he look like in your notes?
In my notes, I have that he looks like a fucking frog in human skin.
He's stretched out.
He's not only is he stretched out, but his face is like smooshed up.
Yeah. Like,
how can you be both at once?
His like arms and legs are like Gumby. Is like
yes, and also like I don't need to see Jesus's pubic hair.
Yeah,
I'm good.
Yeah, unfortunately, the angel does not steal the show. But focus on her if you look at the painting.
But also, tell me if you think that it looks like a frog in a man suit, because I think it does. I think that it does. While an apprentice, he also helped work on the project of mounting a 2-ton ball on top of the dome of the Florence Cathedral. So it was like this big ball, like a golden ball.
What a random thing.
Well, at the time,
yeah.
It's like this huge triumph in like engineering,
I was going to say, yeah. Like all his studies are coming together.
Yes. This was a very pivotal moment for Leonardo.
And it's hard to get a 2-ton ball up there.
Especially during the Renaissance, people.
Yeah. You don't have helicopters.
They don't just have, like, cranes.
Mm-mm. They gotta do some pyramid shit to get that up there.
Yeah. Leonardo was so inspired by this project that he still wrote about it years later in his notebooks, and it really kicked off his fascination with, like, optics and the geometry of light rays.
Huh.
Man. All because of this two-ton ball.
Listen, I like inventions, yeah. engineering, all that stuff.
A two-ton ball?
I don't care about light rays.
Oh, dude. Oh, my God.
His fascination with light rays.
When I took the class in college.
The famous class.
On light rays. Which I received a D in. They talked all about light rays and how the eye perceives them and like how they bounce off of shit. I could not tell you one goddamn thing from that class.
I could tell.
I have nothing up there. Not one crumb.
Not a single light ray in there.
The Grinch came in and stole all of the thoughts and memories.
But he's very fascinated.
He loves it. At the age of 20, Leonardo was qualified to be a master in the guild of artists and doctors of medicine.
Man, they just don't have guilds anymore.
They really don't.
You know?
Now they have like clubs.
Yeah.
And like even that is like not popular.
A guild sounds cool.
Yeah. A guild is cool. And now I know that this sounds kind of odd for an artist to belong to a guild for doctors of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive
on the guild. What's this guild about?
In large cities in Europe, the guild for artists was usually called the Guild of St. Luke, because Luke was the patron saint of artists.
Okay.
So the Guild of St. Luke. The local government would give the guilds the power to regulate specific trade within the city. So you like had to be a guild member to hire apprentices, to sell paintings to the public.
Oh, interesting.
To be able to open a shop in general.
Okay. So you basically need to join this guild.
Yeah. If you want to be an artist, yeah, you got to be in the guild. Guilds would also usually make judgment over disputes between like two artists or like an artist and their client.
Okay.
They would like preside over it.
Interesting. Man, they have like a lot more influence than I thought.
I know. Italy technically didn't have a specific artist's guild, so they combined them with the doctors because painters had to buy their pigments from apothecaries.
Oh, okay.
So they're like, yeah, these two things are the same.
Yeah, you guys sell paint.
So artists, doctors,
join the guild.
Join the guild. If you were a sculptor, like as an artist, you were part of the Masters of Stone and Wood.
Oh, so like you're the Masons and Carpenter Guild.
Yes, literally.
Man, interesting.
So he joins the Artists Guild.
It's really weird how they categorize stuff.
I know.
Like, I mean, this is over 500 years ago.
Right.
But still, it's weird.
Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you use these things, so that makes you the same.
I mean,
you use the same tools, the same materials.
I understand how they got there. It's a little flawed, but I understand how they got there.
I can see the train of thought. I'm just not hopping on.
Nah.
His father set him up with his own art studio and workshop, little Nepo baby.
Hmm.
But Leonardo was still really close with Verrocchio, so he was still collaborating with him and living with him.
Well, somebody's got to paint Verrocchio's placed his brush down.
And like Leonardo just loves it there.
Oh, okay.
It's like, this is like the happening place. Everybody's minds are churning.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool here.
Okay. Yeah. Go back and like get influenced by your peers.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's like literally what they would do back then. I mean, they still do it today. You just like talk to your peers and you're like, let's kick around some ideas.
Yeah.
You know? At 26, Leonardo was given his first independent art commission, and it was to paint an altarpiece for a chapel. So this was really like his first step in his journey toward independence from Verrocchio's studio. This was like the first break.
Okay. Somebody's like, hey, Verrocchio who? I want you, Leonardo.
Paint this chapel.
Ooh, does he do a good job?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, it's Leonardo da Vinci. He's gonna do good.
Yeah, that's true.
At the age of 30, Leonardo decided to reach out to the Duke of Milan to offer his services.
Hey, man. Just calling to see
If you're interested in me.
You need an artist. I'm in the guild.
I'm pretty great.
Guild certified, so you know.
You see that angel in that painting? I painted that angel.
Write me back.
In his letter to the Duke, he starts out with, "Most illustrious lord." Doesn't that sound like Luke Skywalker when he first addresses Jabba the Hutt?
Yeah.
That was the first thing that I thought of.
What a line to open up with. Like, man.
Right? That's something.
It's coming on strong.
It's a little ballsy.
But again, 500 years ago.
You gotta come on strong. As Leonardo put it, he wanted to acquaint the Duke with his secrets.
Oh. So he's like playing coy.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, do you need my services? Because like...
I think you're great and I have these real fat juicy secrets.
I think you need to hear them. Yeah. So you're going to hire me or what?
You were hired as just like a secret teller.
You're a gossip artist.
Yeah. So apparently these secrets consisted of being able to construct bridges that are like really light and strong and portable.
Mm.
So that like you could pursue an enemy.
Sure.
If you wanted. Another secret of his was a cannon that was light and easy to transport. So like a mobile cannon.
Wow.
And in times of peace, he can construct buildings and sculpt and paint.
When we're not killing people, I can use bridges for other things. I can build things.
I can make you beautiful things to look at. Most illustrious lord.
Okay. Does he take him up on it?
Yeah, Leonardo's accepted by the Duke of Milan.
He's like, you're right. I want to know those secrets.
You know what? This guy, he got me.
Come aboard.
That opening line, get your little tushy over here. So he's accepted by the Duke of Milan, and he works in Milan from 1482 to 1499.
Wow, that's a long time.
He doesn't work for the same Duke during that time, but that's his time in Milan.
Okay.
While under the patronage of the Duke, Leonardo had a lot of artistic freedom. He basically gave all of his little hobbies some attention. He was really into science, anatomy, military fields. He's just like dabbling in everything.
Mm. Well, I guess when you're like working for the Duke or in this court, you have a lot of time.
Yeah.
And resources.
It's like, hey, your whole purpose here is just to create.
Just dabble, bro.
Just figure out where your fancy lies. He also dabbled a little in performing arts and was like super into that. He created like stage designs for performances and like celebrations.
Man, what doesn't this guy do?
He's a true Renaissance man.
He is.
He is the quintessential.
In every sense of the word.
Renaissance man. He's a very busy man during his time in Milan. He was also commissioned for two paintings, one of which is his famous painting, The Last Supper.
Oh, that so, I do know.
Yes, it is Leonardo that paints The Last Supper.
I'm very familiar with that artwork.
I'm sure you are. Something that's important to remember about this time in art is that being able to paint correct perspective was discovered in around 1415. So like before then, people did not paint with like in perspective.
Okay. They almost like more so drew.
It was like very flat.
Yeah.
Like 2D basically. It's like construction paper cutouts.
Man. So like what changed? Like obviously someone did it first, but like what in our brains changed where we were like, yo, 3D.
It was just like a Newtonian moment when the apple struck the head and the guy was like, buildings are getting smaller the further away they are.
Yeah.
So by the time that Leonardo was born, it had only been like discovered for around 35 years. Okay. So like he is in the infancy of like art right now.
What a good time to ascend to the top.
Yeah, man. He is riding high all through life.
It seems that way.
I don't know that there's ever a time in his life when he's not like, not sucking on some fat hog, but like.
Is that the expression?
I don't think it is. But like. He's like living pretty good his whole life. I don't remember what the expression is. Well, but you know what I mean.
Sure I do.
Leonardo was masterful at showing perspective. He got this down as good as one can get it down.
Okay.
So during his time in Milan, he was commissioned by the Duke to paint a room in his castle. So Leonardo ended up doing this style of art that I cannot pronounce, but it creates this like optical illusion of there being like 3D walls. So like the room would be painted with like trees on the walls and then like onto the ceiling, but in perspective so that it looked like an arched dome or something.
That's pretty cool sounding.
Yeah. So like if you look up, it looks like you're sitting underneath of these like interwoven trees.
Yeah, it's like a tree canopy almost, mm-hmm. but exactly. like arched.
So all of this to say that like, I think it's important to show his skill level with art because these are like ideas that are just beginning to be explored. And like, he also has just such a crazy mind for like engineering.
I was going to say like just his art is probably mind blowing to the common man at this time.
It is.
Cause it's like, they're starting to see 3D art, mm-hmm. but not like his.
Yeah. And he like gets obsessed with like putting geometry and like math into his paintings. And like, he is the one that figured out that like what proportions are on a human body, basically.
Man.
We'll get into that later.
I think I know about that one.
Unfortunately for Da Vinci, in 1500, his Duke of Milan was overthrown by France.
Ugh.
So Leonardo fled for Venice with his assistant and a mathematician that he was close with.
Okay. I mean, yeah, you got to get out of there.
Yeah. While in Venice, Da Vinci worked as a military architect and an engineer, figuring out how to defend the city from naval attacks.
Man, what a job. Like, that's what you do every day. You wake up and you're like,
I got a design.
We must defend.
We must defend the city. We must defend this house. And I'm going to figure out the math to do it.
Well, he's the guy to do it.
Well, and you know what's so funny is that, like, so you knew Da Vinci as the inventor.
Mm-hmm.
I knew him as the artist. I had no fucking idea that he was, like, so good at math that, like, he was an architect, an engineer. Like, I knew that he knew math and could, like, do proportions and shit. But I did not know that it was to this level.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of crazy. Yeah. Two different perspectives,
yes.
One might say.
Yes. Different proportions. Yeah, he's like the golden goose, man. He can do everything.
He can. He truly can. After a few years of working as an architect and an engineer, Da Vinci returned to Florence and returned to the guild for artists there.
Oh, back again, just like he came back home that one time. Now he's back to the guild.
He has returned. The prodigal son has returned. And that is a painting by a different artist who uses some of Da Vinci's lighting techniques.
Mm.
You're welcome. It was during that same year that Leonardo began working on a portrait of Lisa del Giocondo, the alleged model for the Mona Lisa.
Ooh.
That you know of too.
I've seen that one.
In person.
Yeah. It's very crowded if you go.
Oh my God. It's almost not worth it to see it.
It's really small.
It's very small. You cannot get close to it at all. It's behind so much like glass.
And like ropes and security.
Yeah. I mean, like, not that I want to like be up on the Mona Lisa, but like, it's not just that it's roped off. It's not just that it's encased in plexiglass. It is both of those things. So yeah. It's like you're standing, if you're at the front of the line, like 10 feet from the painting.
Easy. Yeah. I mean, it's still cool.
It's very cool.
But just
cool.
Be prepared to wait.
You're going to be waiting a long time.
And it's not going to be as big as you want.
No. And especially if you are waiting in line to take a picture. Oh my God. Mm-mm. Not worth it.
Just go see it.
Just Google it.
But we don't know for sure if that was the model.
We don't know 100%, but it's like the most likely person to have been the model.
Okay.
All right. We are going to do a little deep dive on the Mona Lisa.
Okay.
So to start, in Italian, the word Mona means ma'am, madam,
okay,
lady. So it's really just my lady Lisa, or like Madame Lisa.
Okay. All right.
The painting was painted for Lisa's husband, who was a Florentine silk merchant.
So he like commissioned it, I guess, from Leonardo.
Mm-hmm. Mona Lisa has a very strong resemblance to depictions of the Virgin Mary, who was seen as like the ideal standard of beauty and womanhood during the Renaissance.
Oh, naturally. Especially in Italy.
Yes. She is the most beautiful, holy of women. And every woman must strive to look like her.
And be a virgin forever.
Oh. Till you die.
If she can do it, why not you?
Why not you? But so Mona Lisa like has attributes of like the woman that it's supposed to be of, but like he made her look more like the Virgin Mary.
Okay. Hmm. So he like blended them together.
Yes. Leonardo didn't use outlines for this painting, which is why it kind of has that quality of like seeming to be alive and like kind of following you. Like wherever you move, you know? Okay.
Interesting.
The style that he uses helps to create like a soft blend, which is particularly visible at like the corners of the mouth and the eyes, because people are always like, is she smiling?
That's true. Yeah. People do always say that.
Yeah. And that's because of this technique that he uses. It makes her seem very alive.
Yeah. As someone who's very ignorant to art, you don't really think about the techniques that people like deploy and use intentionally.
Right. And that's like totally different for the time, you know, like you're a visionary using this technique.
Yeah. I laugh, but it's true.
This painting was also one of the first Italian portraits to show an imaginary background.
Oh, so like they always were trying to go for realism.
They were always painting whatever was behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first time that it's like, because it looks out over like a balcony into like this like riverbed plain.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is just made up.
Yeah, he just threw it on there.
He just made it up.
Yeah, just made it up.
In 2007, it was discovered after doing ultra high resolution scans that the Mona Lisa was originally painted with eyelashes and eyebrows. Because she does not have them now.
Interesting.
And they disappeared over time, likely due to overcleaning the painting.
Oh.
So she was not always hairless.
They just rubbed it off.
They literally rubbed it off.
Man. Good thing we did that x-ray.
The original commissioner of the painting never collected the painting. So once Leonardo died, it was still in his possession. And the possession line of the Mona Lisa gets a little like messy and confusing.
Man, like before we go there, I just wonder why he never collected it.
I think he either just like maybe didn't have the money or like.
That's true.
Died, yeah. Or moved, fell on hard times.
Maybe him and Lisa split.
And he's like, I don't want that picture.
Just burn it.
Yeah. And it's like, dude, this.
Put it in a museum. I don't care.
I don't fucking care. So his paintings and works were, once he died, they were willed to his assistant, which like we'll get into all that later too. But King Francois I of France had the Mona Lisa in his possession. He then displays it at a semi-public art gallery.
Okay.
And it stayed there until 1800, when the Mona Lisa was hung in Napoleon Bonaparte's bedroom in the Tuileries Palace.
Man. Gosh. What a journey it's already taken.
I know. And we haven't even made it to the Louvre yet. So in 1804, Mona Lisa is moved to the Louvre Museum, and that's where it lives today. Would you like to guess what the current worth of the Mona Lisa is appraised at?
Man, okay. It's definitely in the millions.
Mm-hmm.
50 million. Higher or lower?
Higher.
Okay.
Give me one more guess and then I'll tell you.
150 million.
Nope.
Dang, what is it?
$860 million.
Wow. I really didn't think it was going to be that close to a billion. Yeah. I was like, nah, there's no way it's 500 million. It's got to be lower.
Yeah.
Man. But like, what are you going to do with that? Who's gonna steal that and sell it, and who's going to buy it for that?
Yeah, I mean,
because nobody's going to pay the Louvre that.
No. And like, if somebody was rich enough that they did do that, they would probably still leave it in the museum because it's so protected. It has like all of the best like people taking care of it. You know?
That's true. But I don't know. That's crazy expensive.
Yeah, dude.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. I did not expect it to be worth that much either.
A lot of guacamole.
A lot of the green. Leonardo bopped around quite a bit in his life, but specifically during this time, he is like all over the goddamn place.
During like which time?
This time in his life that we are talking about right this moment.
Well, we were just talking about the 1800s.
Okay, yeah. So now we're back in Leonardo's time.
Okay.
So currently, when we left him, he was in Florence.
Right.
Then he goes back to Milan. He then goes back to Florence to like sort out this will dispute with his 16 siblings. Then he goes back to Milan.
Man, he's just like caught between two cities.
He's just like bouncing back and forth like a little ping pong ball. From 1513 to 1516, he lived in a courtyard at the Pope's palace.
Just in the courtyard?
Just in the courtyard.
Just hung out there.
Because, like, really the courtyard is, like, apartments open onto it.
Yeah.
Not, like, him just living in the garden in a little hut. Which, like, the rich people of, I think it was the 1800s, would hire hermits to live on their land.
Why?
As, like, a lawn decoration.
What the heck? And, like,
my yard is so beautiful that a hermit wants to live here.
I have a hermit.
And tend my yard. Yeah.
You know, it's whatever.
Literally. Yeah, dude. It's a thing. Look it up.
Man. People are so weird.
Yeah. So the Pope commissioned him for a painting, but he ends up canceling the commission.
Hmm.
Then Leonardo is commissioned to make plans for the Pope's, like, he wanted to drain some local marsh.
Okay.
So Leonardo like whipped up the designs for that, but then like it doesn't seem like that happened either. And so like he kind of falls out of favor with the Pope, but like there's no real clear reason why.
Man. So like I guess the Pope just like didn't like his stuff. He's just like, no, I don't like this.
The Pope's like, this guy is a quack.
This sucks.
And a hack. So while he was living with the Pope, he spent a lot of his time practicing botany in the gardens. And was also dissecting cadavers to, like, write up reports.
Huh. I mean, the Pope probably doesn't love that.
Probably not, but...
cadaver shit?
He, like, hands over this big-ass report to, like, the Vatican all about vocal cords and how vocal cords work.
Man. Ooh. It's just creepy to think about him playing with those.
Yeah, well, playing with them.
Well, he had to figure out how they worked.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
He just saw somebody open and go, yep, I understand.
There are the vocal cords. I get it. According to Leonardo's own count, he dissected 30 corpses during his lifetime.
That's quite a bit. This guy really is a jack of all trades. Like,
he is.
I knew he was an artist. I knew he was an inventor. I did not know he was a mortician.
Yeah.
You know, it's wild stuff.
It's fucking crazy. During Leonardo's time in Vatican City, he becomes very ill, and some believed that he had a stroke during this time, which would be the first of multiple leading up to his death. In 1515, France recaptured Milan. Milan had changed from the hands of Italy to France, then to a confederation of like the Swiss and the Spanish, and now it's back to the French. So like Milan is having an identity crisis.
Milan's going through it, man.
They really are. So Leonardo gains the patronage of King Francois I and goes back to France with him.
All right, yeah. I mean, get out of Dodge again.
Yeah.
I feel like this is just like every year or two, this is his life.
He just moves to another place. So this time he goes to France. Some of the projects that he worked on under the patronage of King Francois included plans for like a big castle town that the king wanted to build.
Okay, I'm in castle town. Hell yeah.
He made this really cool mechanical lion. Would you like to hear about the lion?
Yeah.
Apparently, during a pageant, it was able to walk toward the king, and when tapped with a wand, its chest opened to reveal lilies.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. He's just like building fucking toys.
He's building parade floats. Like, what's going on?
During this time, he's also still semi-actively working on Mona Lisa.
Oh, okay. His masterpiece is not yet complete.
It will never be complete. She is technically unfinished.
Spoiler alert.
His apprentices did a sketch of him during this time showing his right arm wrapped in cloth. So a lot of people think that like his right hand was paralytic at this point.
Oh, from the stroke.
Well, yeah, they think that he potentially suffered another stroke or just more strokes during this time. So Leonardo passed away 2 years later at the age of 67, and it's likely that he died of a stroke.
Man. Ugh, bummer.
Allegedly, on his deathbed, he was very remorseful that he failed to practice his art as he should have. Like, what the fuck does that mean?
I don't know.
I just didn't do it right. Leonardo and King Francois had become pretty close while Leonardo was under his patronage, and apparently the king was holding Leonardo in his arms when he died. And there's even a painting depicting this and him breathing in Leonardo's last breath.
Oh, that's creepy, man.
That's like weird as fuck, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that like he held him in such high regard.
Yeah.
But that's a weird painting.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's likely that this didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
Like, he probably was in the room with Leonardo because they were very close. And I tried to look up if, like, receiving someone's last breath was like a thing, but Google really failed me on that search, let me tell you. So I don't know if that was a thing or not, or if it was just this one painting where they're like, yeah, he's just breathing this dude's
he's
breath.
Just sucking his last breath. Sucking on the hog.
Sucking on that hog, man. According to his early biographers, Leonardo was a very sweet man, and one even said that his disposition was so lovable that he commanded everyone's affection. Whoa. So he was just like this sweet old man who was, they also said, a sparkling conversationalist.
Man. I mean, he sounds like a pleasant old man to be around then, at the ripe age of only in his 60s.
67. Yep. As far as... just said as far as
I heard it.
As far as personal relationships go, it's very ambiguous and not well known. He definitely had pupils and apprentices. Two of his apprentices started with him as children and then stayed with him until he died.
Wow.
So they like really clung on.
They're almost like reared by him.
Yeah. The one assistant was with Leonardo for 30 years. And he was allegedly willed the Mona Lisa after Leonardo's death and half of his vineyard.
Wow. Man, he had a vineyard too, of course.
Of course he had a vineyard. This apparently was a gift to him by like that first Duke of Milan. His other assistant was also with Leonardo when he died, and he was the one to write to Leonardo's brother to inform him of his death.
Mm-hmm.
And he described in that letter that Leonardo was like a father to him. So he like really shaped those men's lives.
Yeah. They clung onto those coattails.
They really did. So that assistant was willed all of Leonardo's tools, his library, and his personal effects, along with some of his paintings.
Man.
He was also the guardian of Leonardo's personal notebooks and prepared them for publication.
That's a pretty big responsibility.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, it's worth willing him some stuff then.
So his notebooks are pretty fucking wild.
Okay. Are these like diaries? Are these like his...
These are like, think of them as like sketchbooks.
Okay.
And like he would write down all of his ideas, all of his inventions, all of his...
It's an ideas notebook. It's a stream of like consciousness and like ideas.
Yes.
Okay.
Leonardo was left-handed. And some people believe that he wrote in his notebooks, he wrote mirrored. So like from right to left and backwards.
Whoa.
Yeah. So some people think he did that because he was left-handed and it was easier to write that way.
Okay.
Some people have like other theories, but like the writing is mirrored and backwards. Like that's fucking wild.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, he's breaking all kinds of new ground. So maybe, listen, maybe we hear him out on this, guys.
Originally, all of his notebook contents were just like loose pieces of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy that was willed all of his like effects, he had to like put everything together.
Mm. That's a lot of work to compile all that.
Yeah. So after that assistant dies, the notebooks and like manuscripts pass over a lot of hands because the assistant's son like did not care about these at all.
Oh yeah, he was like, who cares about this dead guy?
Yeah, who cares about this dead fucking artist who like, cool, we have his notebooks.
Whatever.
So
have you tried to read them?
They're backwards. So he like really doesn't care what happens to them.
Uh-huh.
And eventually they do make their way back to him and they were then finally published as like manuscripts.
Oh, okay.
So they've all been kind of like split up though. Like there's one that has 13 like sections of this manuscript and that's called the Codex Atlanticus. But there are still like seven other notebooks
just like
out there.
So it's like not really all compiled.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, like some people, like some museums and stuff like own the other notebooks. But like, I don't know if there are any that are like missing. You know what I mean?
Right.
I didn't jump into all that.
Yeah. Like they're probably all accounted for, but they're not all together.
Right.
Okay.
But in these notebooks, he came up with some pretty genius stuff. So through his like study of math and the human body and everything, he, like I said, discovered proportions of like the human body.
Right.
And that every part of the human body is like mathematically in proportion with other parts of the body. Like he figures that shit out.
That's just a crazy thing to even think about.
I know.
You know,
it's like, that's just, I feel like that's just ingrained in us now, but it's ingrained in us because of him.
Uh-huh.
He also used like the golden ratio and like the golden mean a lot in his work. So there's like a ton of references to that in his notebooks.
Oh, okay. I don't know what those are.
That's like that rectangle with then like the spiral that goes into like a square.
You're losing me, man.
Man, okay. I thought that was like a math thing. I guess it's more like an art thing. But it's basically just like the perfect proportions that like occurs in nature or something. I don't know. But anyway, he was just like a visionary. Like he did have a lot of notes and observations and inventions for like flying wings and just how like birds' wings work.
Yeah, man, if only he could have achieved flight.
I know, he
was so close.
But the Wright brothers did it instead.
They did it instead. He was especially fascinated with the human eye, like I said before. And he debunked the idea that the human eye sent out invisible rays. And instead that like we're, or not we are not eyeballs, but that our eyeballs are receptive organs. And they like see by reflected light. Like he figures that out.
Man, it's crazy. Like, you know, you said earlier, you think he's on level with like Einstein.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, man.
I have one more example to maybe sway you to my side.
Okay.
So since he dissected so many cadavers, he had a very vast understanding of how the human body worked. And he understood certain parts of the human body, like anatomy, that was like decades, if not centuries, before they were published in medical textbooks. But since his notebooks were just like scattered to the wind, nobody knew that we already had the information.
It was like lost knowledge almost.
Basically, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, he figured that out, but he didn't really get to contribute it to society, you know?
Yeah, so like he figured it out, but he wasn't able to spread it while he was alive or like very well after his death until like maybe just 300 years ago.
Yeah.
But he did it first.
But he knew.
He knew. And he is correct in like all of his mathematics and everything.
Man, that is so crazy.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what do you think? Do you think he's on Einstein's level?
I mean, definitely on his level, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But like just very different.
Yeah.
Einstein, he has a lot of knowledge, but I'd say it almost feels a little more niche.
Mm-hmm.
Just because Da Vinci's got like so the creativity to him as well.
He's got like everything in one. Yeah. He's got the amazing painting abilities, the amazing math abilities.
Yes, sir.
The amazing science abilities.
You betcha.
So like, yeah, he is
a triple threat.
A triple threat and a Renaissance man.
He is a Renaissance man. Da Vinci.
I think he is like the definition. When you look up Renaissance man, it's his face that's in the dictionary.
I bet it is.
So, I mean, I feel like I really don't even have to ask, but like, would you invite him to the smoke circle?
Yeah, that's a 100%. That's a, you get a free pass. Come back anytime.
You get like bumped up to the list.
Yeah.
Like first, the tippy top of the list.
First off, crazy, smart, inventive, creative person.
Yeah.
But on top of that, his assistants say he was a nice guy.
Yeah. He's so like, he's a little old grandpa, sweetie pie.
Let's smoke it up, bro.
Yeah. And he's also apparently, or was, a vegetarian.
Come on by.
He just loves animals.
We got grass.
We got a dog. He was just like a cool dude.
Yeah.
I think if he...
Way before his time.
Yeah, I think if he lived in like the 1900s, like through the 60s, he totally would be a pothead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would hope. I would hope we could join him.
He would like... He would smoke pot and then his mind would like turn into the universe, you know?
Like an Oppenheimer?
Yeah. Like, that's what it would be like. But I'm imagining it not as, like, crystal clear as I was in Oppenheimer.
Okay.
More like, it's a movie from the early 2000s, or like, 90s.
It's a little bit of blur.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'd invite him.
Well, yeah. He's in.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's it. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Half-Baked History Podcast. If you like the show, please leave a review or tell a friend.
For show updates and more, follow us on social media. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at HalfBaked, HISTRY. See you next time.